This is the Ethanol Report. Chuck Woodside, general manager of Kappa Ethanol in Minden, Nebraska, was recently reelected for a second year as chairman of the Renewable Fuels Association. Woodside believes that 2011 has been a good year for ethanol production, but another challenging year on the policy level.
We have worked through the last year as far as margins are concerned. I think a lot of balance sheets were repaired for the various ethanol companies. And so I think everybody has had a pretty successful year on that perspective. Certainly, as we look at it from a policy perspective, we had and continue to have plenty of challenges in Washington, not only those that are ethanol specific, but trying to work within it on a broader scope and the fiscal constraints and attention that there is in Washington.
On the positive side, Woodside said the year got off to a good start with the EPA approval of 15% ethanol in gasoline for newer vehicles.
That is a significant decision, one that we are split on in the fact that it's for only model cars that are 2001 or newer. But I think the ability to be able to move forward with marketing that product is really important. We need to look at levels beyond E10 for blend levels, and E15 opens that up for us. The EPA decision was certainly the first of many things that we're going to need to have done in order to be able to market that product. And the Renewable Fuels Association is working hard, not only working to meet some of the federal regulations, but also within each state there are requirements, and even in some cases at the local level, in order to be able to offer E15.
At the same time, RFA is addressing challenges facing the EPA decision, which has yet to be implemented.
Small engine manufacturers have been very vocal opponents to the whole E15 position. There have been legal challenges to it. There's just no doubt, as you look, though, at the testing that was done around E15, it's one of the most highly tested motor fuels that are out there. And I think it's 7 trips to the moon. The E15 had been tested on enough miles that were equivalent to 7 trips to the moon and back. The documentation is there. The information is there. And we just continue to see our opponents put potential roadblocks up. But I think that the testing has been done by EPA, and I think EPA is comfortable with the amount of testing. Otherwise, they wouldn't have issued the waiver.
Woodside says RFA tried to work with Congress earlier this year to reduce the budget deficit by giving up the volumetric ethanol excise tax credit, or the blender's tax credit, early. But it's expected to go away for good at the end of this year.
Industry had agreed to work to reform the volumetric excise tax credit, and the Renewable Fuels Association worked hard in putting together a package that was acceptable in a very fiscally constrained Washington. An agreement was reached in the Senate where we would end VTEC early, and it would contribute $1.6 billion in deficit reduction. However, because of how things have gone in Washington, it's been very difficult to move any kind of legislation. The only legislation that moved was the debt ceiling package, and there was not a revenue component to that. So at this point in time, as it's our expectation that the volumetric excise tax credit, along with the small producers tax credit and several others, will expire as of 12/31 of this year.
Woodside believes the U.S. ethanol industry can continue to compete even without the tax credit.
As we sit here today, ethanol is 24 cents cheaper than gasoline in Chicago, and that's without the volumetric excise tax credit. So ethanol today remains the cheapest motor fuel that's available on the market. There will be some transition, but I think as the industry is confident that in the current environment, we can compete with gasoline without the volumetric excise tax credit. The VTEC, as it's referred to, was an incredibly successful program as far as encouraging production and then encouraging expansion at the terminals. And we think there's opportunities to build on that initial investment that the taxpayers made in our industry.
Meanwhile, RFA would like to see the oil industry have some of its subsidies go away as well.
Proposal that we made and ultimately agreed upon in the ethanol industry really sets a model for how subsidies should be handled in a lot of different areas, in a lot of different industries. And so we think that that model could be applied to the oil industry as well and work towards additional deficit reduction, because the oil subsidies continue to be a large issue. And one of the things that we've asked for continually as an industry is an open market and access to the markets that's there.
As the blender's tax credit is expected to expire, the Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS2, which requires an increasing amount of renewable fuels to be used in the United States, is facing growing attacks.
I really believe that the RFS is going to continue to be under attack. We need to continue to reinforce the benefits that ethanol has brought. First of all, about economic development in rural areas. There is no doubt in my mind that the economic success that we're seeing in the Midwest and in rural America today is in a large part driven because of the prosperity of the agricultural sector. And ethanol has been an important part of that. The second piece of that would have to go towards the use of 10% ethanol has made a tremendous impact and improvement in air quality. And so the environmental benefits of ethanol continue to be strong and will continue going forward. The third part of it continues to be energy independence, in that we are now no longer having to import 10% of our fuel because it is domestically made.
Woodside notes that ethanol production keeps getting more efficient, and continued support is needed to move toward next-generation ethanol.
When I talk about innovation in the industry, certainly the next-generation ethanol is a part of that innovation. But there's a lot of innovation going on within the corn-based ethanol. In other words, how do we continue to get more value out of that bushel of corn? You cannot have a successful second generation without a successful first-generation ethanol. And so that's why the commitment needs to continue to be there for corn-based ethanol as people continue to invest in the next generation of ethanol. And there is a tremendous amount of investment being made there. But if the investors are not convinced that the country is committed long-term to sound energy policy and energy independence, they'll start to question their investment as well. And that's why that commitment has to continue going forward.
Woodside sees an increasing opportunity for U.S. ethanol in the export market.
Because we're probably producing at a rate of 13.9 billion gallons annually domestically. But it is estimated that next year we will export almost 1 billion gallons of ethanol. We have already exported more ethanol in the first part of 2011 than we did in all of 2010. And 75% of those exports are going to Canada, which has always been a big market for U.S. ethanol, but more importantly, Brazil and the European Union. And so that export market has been a big piece in balancing our industry as far as a demand perspective. So the United States today remains the largest producer of ethanol in the world.
The RFA chairman says the ethanol co-product distillers' grains has also seen increasing exports and remains a valuable product for the domestic livestock market, which is too often ignored by the industry.
It's really disappointing from my perspective that agriculture would be fractured with respect to the ethanol industry. In our area, the ethanol industry has made the feedlot industry in Nebraska far more competitive on a national basis because of their access to the wet distilled grains. And I think that sometimes that is lost within the national organizations of some of the livestock groups. The fact that we are sending a better product out to the feedlots and to the poultry producers and the pork producers is one that is important. And it certainly has been picked up by the world community, and they value our DDGs in their feed rations as well.
Woodside believes the concerns about corn stocks this year are temporary and that American farmers can continue to produce enough for all needs.
Although it's not as big a crop as last year, we're in the process of harvesting a very large corn crop, and while we may continue, because of weather conditions and other issues, continue to deal with a tight carryout for the next year as far as stocks are concerned, I think it's important to note that long-term, the average yield of corn in the United States grows 1.5 bushels per acre. So on 80 million acres, we are producing another 140 million bushels every year that need to find a home. And in my mind, that yield growth creates long-term opportunities even for corn-based ethanol.
The chairman of the Renewable Fuels Association is looking forward to 2012 for the ethanol industry and the 17th Annual National Ethanol Conference coming up February 22nd through the 24th, 2012, in Orlando.
The program is starting to come out. We're excited about the prospects for the coming year. There is a tremendous amount of optimism in the industry right now. There is a tremendous amount of innovation going on within the industry right now. And while the politics are there and will certainly be there going forward, there are all these other issues that we'll be addressing, the regulatory side and some of those issues, the opportunities for E15. And it's those kinds of things that we'll be addressing at the conference. And so I know that it will be one that will garner a lot of attention with respect to the topics, as well as some of the speakers.
Thank you very much, Chuck Woodside, Chairman of the Renewable Fuels Association and General Manager of farmer-owned Kappa Ethanol in Minden, Nebraska. That's the Ethanol Report. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.